Now this is the beginning of Channel One Right and beginning of the visit with Shirley this Friday morning, the 12th of March, 1971. After the vet had been there and butchered the cow, the heifer, to see what she died of. Channel One Right and the beginning of the visit with Shirley this Friday morning, the 12th of March, 1971. This beginning of Channel One Right and the beginning of the visit with Shirley this Friday morning, 12th of March, 1971. Channel One Right, beginning of the visit with Shirley this Friday morning, the 12th of March, 1971.
Shirley, what in the devil is going
to
happen?
He said it only happens to one in a thousand.
And it would
very rare to happen to one in a thousand. He says usually one in 1,500, 2,000.
And it would happen to you.
I said, I mean, it happened to me. He says, yeah, it happened to me.
And she wasn't poisoned at all?
No. Now, what made me think she was poisoned? It was right at, just before I talked to you on the telephone. I had given some feed to the other little calves, you know. Well, I turned around, looked at this heifer after I gave her a can feed and went in and fed the other little one. And I come back out and she's like that, you know, and drooling and the feed was all coming out here. She's coughing it out and staggering around. And Vernon said, that's how that other one happened. How he noticed her, she started staggering. And I was, oh, Lordy. You know, I just knew.
After feed.
It had to be in that feed. And I just got through giving feed to the other stuff. And he gave it to the horse and the cows. And I thought, oh, my Lord, I just knew it was that, because what else would kill him that quickly, you know? But he said, no, even poisoning wouldn't kill him that fast. Well, so I went right then and called Dr. Beasley and Dr. Anderson. He answered the phone. I said, listen, mister, I said, we got some trouble out here. I said, I don't know what it is. And he said, I told him, I said, how quickly she died. He said, I'll be there within the hour. And that was at 8 o'clock. But he was there. He was there by 9. But he said that she had had a bad heart probably ever since she was brought.
Oh.
So I think that he's probably right, because the heart was all in bad shape. It was all discolored, you know, just like it had clots in it. It was terrible. And the heifer was one but 4.5 months old, 4 months old, something like that. 15th of November.
Well, if we want to know anything new, just ask your guy.
Shirley, you thought you had 2 sick calves.
What was wrong with that other one that was choking on the feed? It evidently went down. You know, they've done that several times before, but it scared me because it just happened. This one just happened to stagger and get around like she did. I thought the same thing was happening to her, you see. But what had happened to this other one? She had choked on the feed. It had gone down the windpipe. And you know how they stagger around when they're choking?
Yeah.
And that's what was wrong with her. She cleared up right after I talked with you and went down and checked her again, and she was all right.
But the other one
dropped dead within a half hour.
You never had that happen before.
Never.
Well, who has?
And that was a she was just as lively. He says, has this heifer ever been sick? And I said, no, sir. I said, she's been as healthy and never, never moped it a day in her life. The time she's been here. And he says, well, he says, that heart sure shows that she's had clots because she's had several. He says, it looks like she's had 3 or 4 heart attacks. And that last one was a strong one. He said she was in pain before she died. And she was. You could tell she was in pain. Well, when I went down there and looked in her eyes, I told Berman, I said, honey, she's going to die within the hour. And sure enough, we picked her up. He picked up her back legs. He said, no, he said, I want the vet to come out here before she dies. He said, I think she'll live long enough for him to look at her. And I said, no, she's going to die within the hour. He picked up her back legs, and I picked up her head as much as we could, and we put her up under that shed. They drug her from the water trough over there.
Yeah.
And he put down her back legs, and she was dead. Just like that. Just like he dug in a gun and shot her.
All that almost before breakfast.
Right after breakfast. I wish it had been before breakfast.
Okay, I don't know how Shirley got all the neighbors over there at the same time.
No, but they happened to be. They happened to come over. Marvin and them had had trouble with their cow, and they wanted to know what I would do about her.
Oh.
And I told them then about the heifer dying. They went down to look at her, and they were there then when the vet came up. But they'd had a cow that was in labor for some time before they found her, and they called the vet, and the vet came out and pushed the calf back in, turned tongue. So they pushed it back in, turned it, and pulled the calf, and he threw the calf around, beat it on the ground and everything to get the breath in it, you know. And the calf's all right. The calf's living and having a ball, but the cow's down and she can't get up. And I told him, I said, what I think happened was, when he pushed that calf back in her, that he injured some muscles when he was turning the calf around.
Yeah.
And I said, that's just about the way that little heifer was, you know, that was down that we had that got out.
Yes.
I told him, I said, I think if you leave her alone, she'll be all right. And she says, well, the vet said that she would be up today. So then this morning she came over and she said, Miss Dolly, what would you do with that heifer? She's down and she won't get up. And I said, well, I'd give her a shot of penicillin and feed her all I could and just leave her alone. So then the vet came out, and she said, Dr. Anderson, just what would I do with that cow? She won't get up. He said, well, I'd give her a shot of penicillin and feed her all I could and leave her alone. He said the same words I told her. So he gave her the shot of penicillin, the needle. And she looked at me when she said to him, she says, well, that's just what Mrs. Dodd said. So they went on home happy then, satisfied that the cow will get up.
Yeah.
But it was funny. Oh, that was, it was so comical, you know.
Hey, what do you got? I got a refreshment.
I'm going to give Shirley some coffee.
I've had a big morning
for
myself already.
Pardon?
I'm not used to this much excitement.
He had to help me pull that heifer. You know, they butchered her, and then we had to cut her open, and then we had to move her so that we could let the other heifers out of the rye field. He told me to never leave the cows on the rye more than 3 days. They'd been out there a week. And he said he'd just found 25 beautiful heifers bloated because of the rye. So he said, never leave them out there more than 3 days. Well, I hadn't been, but they were so puny, and I thought, well, the grass wouldn't hurt them, you know, and it hadn't been fertilized in so long, it wouldn't hurt them. So to get the benefit of all the grass, I just left them out there. And he says, I wouldn't do it.
Well, what is it? They've got to have dry feed, too.
Evidently.
They just bloat.
It causes a watery substance. The rye causes a watery substance in their intestines, and it bloats them so much that they can't take it, and it kills them.
Yeah.
So he said the best thing to do is to put them on there not more than 3 days and get them off, and then take them off for 3 days and put them back on again for 3 days.
Well, I didn't know that.
So
I didn't know it made them sick.
No, I didn't either. Not rye. I knew clover would or something like that would bloat them, but not rye.
All I knew, people had told me not to leave them on, and when you put them on, take them off pretty soon and give them some hay or dry feed and put them out in dry pasture.
Yeah. And he said the same thing goes for corn. If you have a field of corn and you turn them in on the corn stalks, you know, to eat what they can of the corn stalks, then he said if you put them in on something like that, not to leave them in there more than a couple of days because they'll founder on that, and we had that to happen. And on that watermelon patch that we had, when they got through with the watermelons, he said anything that's been highly fertilized would cause a bloat. Anything green like that that's been fertilized would cause a bloat.
Do you put this in first or not?
She can do it.
No, I'll put
what happened to the, what happened when you put them on the old corn?
They bloat up just like they do on the corn. Yeah, all of them. You know, the cornfield we had in there that, this guy was here, Freddie Woods.
Yeah.
He came out there and he was supposed to, pick that corn for us. He never did get it picked. The storm hit it. So we turned the cows in there to eat it, and they got founded on it. We just left them in there about a week, and they all got founded. We had to give each cow. We doctored them for 3 weeks, and we had to give them Beats was shot for 3 days. We skipped 3 days, giving shots again for 3 days. Then we'd skip a week and give him a shot. And then we skipped a month and give him, 2 weeks and give him a shot. And then skipped a month and give him a shot. And they were all right. But you have to gradually get them out of it. Can I pour this for you?
I better put a spoon in here.
Oh. Say when?
That's just it.
Okay, you got a little drink, a cup of coffee?
I've had mine, Shirley. I'll just watch you.
They ain't not much of a coffee drinker. You drink it
for
breakfast,
don't
you?
Boy, I do for breakfast. You know. And in the morning like this, anybody needs coffee. Oh, Lordy.
Shirley, you have really had experience with cattle.
Well, I like it. I'm interested in them. And anybody that has a story to tell me about them, I try to, you know, remember, because you never know when it could happen to you. You know, something like that. But I was determined to get that cow, an autopsy on that cow, the calf, this morning, because I was afraid that those other cows might come down with the same thing.
Yeah.
I couldn't figure that out. That was just, when he said 1 out of 1,000, it made me feel a little bit, you know, that I wasn't quite that stupid, but I couldn't figure that out. Why that calf would stagger, and in a half an hour, be dead as a doornail.
Yes.
How
old? I just couldn't figure that out.
Well, she went off without finishing. I told her she ought to finish it. She going.
Yeah,
she
well,
got
I
to
do that
bit.
Later. I had to get away from her for a while. I helped him to cut her open, and that's all I could stomach for a while.
Oh, you took a hand
yeah,
in that.
Yeah. And, well, he had to have somebody hold the legs apart, you know, and the rest of it.
Hey, you going to get a little of the meat for the dog?
Yeah, I think I will. And that liver looks like it'd be all right for them. So,
sure looked big, huge.
But that heart was shot.
You could see
that heart was shot. When he took it out of there, it had streaks of black and dark, you know, blood in it. You know, a heart is supposed to be a sort of a grayish, mellow brown looking color. Even when you go to cook it or cut it up, you know, it's not supposed to be have a lot of clots in it. But this was just full of clots. And he said that heifer had 3 heart attacks, he thought. At least 3. Because there was 3 large streaks down there where she had trouble. So one of those might have been the last one you see. Yeah. So.
You know, I think real often when I see my cows, especially when they have trouble with the udder or something, just how they survive in a state of nature. A lot of things happen to animals. A calf will let one quarter get a hit of him, and then he won't suck it out.
Yeah.
And then that makes a cow
mastitis.
Nervous.
Yeah.
And she won't let him get around that any of them.
Well, that happens to our milk cow. That happens to the... I wonder if that has any relation to what happened to the heifer. The milk cow, the mother of this calf that just died, develops mastitis very easily.
Yeah.
Now, he'll leave 1 quarter there that he doesn't finish out. And if we don't catch it and milk it out, she'll develop mastitis in that quarter, and then we have to doctor her for that. But every time she has a calf, she has mastitis in 1 quarter or another, and then we have to doctor it. And of course, you can't use it for the next 2 or 3 days.
Yeah.
You have to keep doctoring it. So we lose that much milk. And
yeah, the trouble.
But she's that cow must be 12, 15 years old.
Yeah.
So we probably won't use her much anymore.
See, I was over there yesterday afternoon. Berman brought the milk in. What was that big bucket? Nickel, silver?
Stainless steel.
Stainless steel.
My gosh, yeah.
And it's a huge bucket. You know?
But we've had that thing. Let me see. We had that. We bought that right after we were married. We were married 15 years on the 5th of this month. So we've had that bucket about 13 years, 14
yeah.
years.
Yeah.
And it's outlasted any other bucket that we've ever, you know, used. We get these flimsy buckets. They call them milk buckets. They're made of tin or something, nickel or something or another. And we'd put them down, and the next thing you know, they would be squashed in,
yeah.
or they'd have a hole in them, or the handle would break, or something would
yeah,
go wrong,
that's right.
and we couldn't use them. And we'd pay $3-4 for a bucket like that. So we got tired of the whole mess and ordered this one from Sears. I think it was around $16-20, somewhere around there. Did he tell you how much it was? I forgot.
I remember it was way up there.
Yeah, $17, $18, something like that.
Awful lot of paper bucket, though.
But it's lasted, look at all these years, and it's still good as new.
Yeah, it's good as new.
And I wash dishes and pots and pans and everything else out of it sometimes.
Oh, do you?
I use it for a number of things. If I'm cooking jam or something like that, I'll use it to cook down the berries or tomatoes or something like that. I'll use it a lot for, you know, as a cooking pot on the stove.
Yeah.
And I've got a big lid that fits over the top of it, so it serves for many purposes.
Oh, you have?
Uh-huh. But that didn't come with it. It's one that goes with another pot that I have.
And then he went to get another one. And they had quit handling them.
That's right. That's right. And I think, though, you can order them. I think you can get somebody to order them through the catalog, you know, the old catalog department there in Sears.
I hate to think what they'd cost now.
Oh, I bet that bucket costs $25 or $30, between $25 and $30 now. I bet it would.
Stainless steel. And it's 3.5 gallons, he said.
Uh-huh. Well, all was about that.
Charlotte was straining up some milk, and it didn't look like much in the bucket, but it strained up a whole lot, you know. And I kept thinking, well, not just how long will this last? It don't last a long time, but it don't last long.
No, we get 2 gallons about to a milking.
Yeah.
We get a little more in the morning, too, about to 2.5 gallons in the morning and about 2 in the evening. And, it's gone. It goes. By
four
morning.
Gallons.
But yeah, about morning, see they drank last night's milk they drank this morning. And now this morning's milk they'll drink this evening. Between the time they get in from school and the time he goes to milk, it'll be just about gone.
Yeah.
We might have 1/2 gallon left.
Yeah. Well, they drink milk instead of water, see.
It goes like, and then if I make puddings or bake and use a lot of or souffles or something like that, then I use a lot of milk. So it goes in a hurry.
But what
makes me mad is to go to the icebox expecting to find milk to bake a cake with and don't find any. That burns me up with a cow down there. Then I have to go down and milk the cow just a couple of quarts.
Oh, Jeremy.
Just to get my milk so I can finish what I'm doing.
But the children that come over there to play and visit with them, they don't drink milk.
No, they don't care about me. I have yet to see one come. Well, yes, there's one little boy from down the creek, Donald Boatnight's little boy. He comes in. Boy, he says, I love milk. And he'll drink glass after glass if you give it to him.
Well,
the others.
How'd he get to drink
milk? I don't know. He just acquired the taste somewhere. They don't buy that much milk. They buy it once in a great while.
Yeah.
And, boy, when he comes to my place, the first thing he says is, Miss Dog, can I have a glass of milk?
You think anybody could keep a cow?
That'd be
milk.
A great treat,
wouldn't
it?
Yeah.
Now, even Faye's...
Well, they're her children. Now, Cindy... If Faye does buy it, Cindy drinks it, and Vaughn won't have any part of it.
Yeah.
And Vaughn is the one that needs it. Cindy doesn't need it at all. But she's like mine. She's a little on the hefty side, and they don't really need it. But Vaughn needs the milk so badly. And I'll tell him that...
He even shows it, doesn't he?
Oh, yeah. Oh, I believe there's something wrong with Vaughn. I wish he... But she's having to the doctor, and he tells her not to worry about him, so... I shouldn't worry, but you do when you see a child like
but
that.
But now, when they come over to your house and your children drink it, and you put it in front of them, they drink it.
Oh, well, Vaughn won't. Vaughn will say, no, thank you. He said, I don't like milk, and he'll just leave it there. But I'll get the chocolate milk and doctor it up a little bit for him, and he'll drink it.
I see.
So I've kind of, you know, got him used to drinking along with the others when he does come over. So each time he comes over, I put a little less chocolate. Pretty soon he'll be on straight milk. But he doesn't complain anymore. He sits there and he'll drink it. He'll drink it. Just as long as it's got a little bit of coloring to it.
Yeah.
See, what they do, you see, they drink this artificial stuff.
Yeah.
It tastes good.
That powdered milk, I don't know. They claim it's got a lot of nourishment in it, but I don't.
Well, they'll drink that.
No, he doesn't drink that either. But
no, they drink the
soda.
Kool-Aid. Kool-Aid. Stuff
yeah.
That's what they drink.
Yeah.
There's a picture of that in all their refrigerators.
That's right. That's what they...
And that's just colored water.
You know, it colors... You put it in a... Malamac cup or a plastic cup of some sort. And it'll color that glass or that container. Or you pour it from a pitcher, and your pitcher has that coloring on the dye or something, the coloring in the Kool-Aid leaves that coloring in the pitcher.
Okay.
What does it do to your stomach?
That's
I can't imagine what I can't imagine what it must do to the stomach. I don't think it's any good. Now once in a while, if we're having a big party and a big get together like the Easter egg hunt we have every year for Easter, we have a 25-30 children out there, about that time. Oh, those are cute.
That's yours.
Is it?
From a long time ago.
I remember that now. I remember it. Yeah, we had Donald Duck, Mickey Mouse, and one other. Maybe it was this one. Yeah, those are cute. I've had so many of those sets for the kids when they were little. I don't think I've got any left. That's the only one.
You color the Easter eggs?
We'd have an Easter egg hunt. Have the kids all over for Easter egg hunts, and I'd fix up fruit juice and Kool-Aid together. You know, mix it in together. When I've got a large quantity like that, sort of makes a punch affair with a ginger ale or something, and they go for that. But that's the only time I use Kool-Aid.
Yeah.
Is on a big get together like this because it goes quite further.
Shirley, one of the last times I was over there, we were sitting there in the kitchen talking, and we were talking about Billy Hughes. You know, I wake up at night singing about Billy Hughes. I just love to see him, and I never expect to run into him. I never do, but all I know him from is through you.
Is that right? That's right. You've never met him,
oh,
have
no.
You? Oh, he was over at the house last week. He stopped by to see if there was this cow. You remember that cow he had in the field? We had him come over and run her out?
Yeah.
Well, he came by after months and months and he asked me, he said, have you seen that cow? I said, no, I haven't seen her. I said, she won't come back in here anymore. I said, you must have given her the word. So he disappeared, and I went out for a walk into the woods. First time I've been out there since I got back, and walked all through the woods out there. And I come around a tree like this, and I was face to face with a cow laying on the ground, and she saw me, and she bellered and tried to get up, you know, and lunged toward me. Well, if she could have ever made it, she'd have had me, because it dumbfounded me. You know, I just stood there sort of paralyzed, hear those great big horns, wearing her breathing right in my face, you know. It just happened on her before I realized she was there, but they are real still. Until you go get right up on them, you know. And I wasn't looking for her. I was looking up the trees and all around, you know. Here I was right on top of her. I just walked around that tree and was right there on her. So she bellered and tried to raise up and tried to lunge toward me. And I backed up a little and went on to the house. And I called Billy, tried to get in touch with Billy Hughes. He hadn't had time to hardly get out of sight. And I couldn't find him anywhere. His wife didn't know where he was. Well, he didn't have a phone at the house. And I called his brother over in Hawthorne. They didn't know where he was at.
Oh, you can't get him at the
You
house.
Can't get that man. You just can't reach him. There's no way on earth you can reach him until the only way I got a hold of him, I called the Hawthorne school to see about his children, to see if they could give him a message when they got home from school. And the kids had been taken out of Hawthorne school and put into the Catholic school in Gainesville. So I had to call a nun at the Catholic school, and I told her there was a cow down out there, and I told her to give the message to the children. She said, well, she would give it to the mother when she came to pick up the children. And then she called me about 3 o'clock in the afternoon, and I said, is there any way Billy can get out here before tonight? Because we were expecting a freeze that night, and I knew if the cow stayed out there during that freeze, it would kill her. So she said, all right. She said, I'll try to give a message to him, but she said, I don't expect to see him until supper, when he comes in for supper, and that'll be too late to go out there and do anything about it tonight. Sure enough, she couldn't get a hold of him, and he didn't come out until about 10 o'clock the next day. Went over there, the cow was still living, he brought her some feed and left it for her, but he didn't have any way of getting her up. And he said, you can't do anything for those Bramers when they get down like that. They're not like your cows. He said, you just have to let them lay. So there's not a thing to be done with them. And the cow was dying with starvation. Just weak. We even couldn't get up. So he went over there and fed her. And he says, I'll be dead back in a day or two and feed her some more. I said, she's got to have water. He says, well, I'll be back in the morning and give her some water. And left her. I don't know whether he ever fed her or whether he gave her water or anything. I couldn't stand to go over there and look at her dying. I'd rather go over there with a gun and shoot her than to let her stay there and suffer. I couldn't do that either, so I just didn't go over there.
Now he has that all the time.
I think she's dead, though. The buzzards are over there. You know, that's what I mean about the buzzards. He just constantly feeds them on one side and both nights with their fish on the other side, so we're just bound to get all the buzzards on our place.
Before we left this morning, we just started out the lane. You looked up and saw that buzzard.
Yeah, and then they're off in
the
field.
And then you looked
the
off over on the other side, and there's 3 or 4 more Faye coming in.
For that heifer that they butchered, the vetted butchered.
Shelly had enough of that heifer, and it all butchered out there and left her outside.
Mm-hmm.
So I knew she'd worry about it, so we went back and drug her into the shed.
Mm-hmm.
But there's 2 other little calves that was also, you know, on the cow that was went around with this young heifer that was dead, so I was afraid they would attack those 2 young calves while they're trying to get to that other dead one, so that was what was worrying me. But, I don't know, I hate those buzzards. Oh, I hate them things.
And both nights, so the old fish scraps.
They won't bury those things, and we get, sometimes when the wind is just right, we get an awful smell from that place. And it's just, you know that rye field there? It's just at the end of that rye field off in those oats, back in their place. And it must run them out of their house. I can't see how in the world they can stand that smell. But they've
along
been doing
the
it for years.
Along the hard road, hard top?
Between the hard top road and our place.
Back of that.
Back
house.
In those, yes. Yeah, back in those oaks.
Away from the mailbox.
Uh-huh.
On that rye field.
No, not in the rye field. You know where the oaks are that cover right in the back of the field? There's some on the side over here, but these are right in the back, and it's between there and their house that they dump them somewhere out there.
Oh, I see.
And
even with the buzzards, they still get an odor.
Yeah, you get an awful odor on a hot, you know, real hot day, and the sun, the wind blowing just right. But I can't see how they can live right there, right next to it, and do that. The health board has been after them for that. I reported about the buzzards attacking the calves, you know. And the one that stopped somehow. And they said there wasn't anything they could do but turn their head while we shot a few. So I tried to do that, but they're the hardest things to hit I've ever seen. You just can't hardly hit those buzzards. I don't know what they're made of, but the bullets just seem to bounce right off of them. They must be tough.
Must be.
Mm.
And then Billy Hughes on the other side, his old cow is getting down.
Yeah. So that leaves us in the middle. But they attack the cows when they're having the calves, you see.
Mm-hmm.
And they pluck their eyes out as they're having them. The cow has no way of defending the calf.
Yeah.
Because she's busy having the calf.
Mm-hmm.
And they kill it while it's being born. And that burns me up. They've killed 4 or 5 now so far this year.
Of yours?
Of our calves, yes.
No.
Why,
yes.
Surely I can't believe that. This is... You mean the buzzards?
It's either 4 or 5. I'm not sure about the 5th one. I think it was already dead when it was born. Because
oh,
they were
gosh,
on it when I got down there. It's costing us money. It's costing us a heck of a pile of money.
I don't guess the buzzards would respect the fence. If they got hit, they'd sure come over on your side.
Yeah. There's nothing we can do about it. I've written letters and I've called and I've been down there at that, during hunting season when they had this little checking station down there by the railroad track. I went down there and I sat with that guy and talked for hours on how to get rid of these buzzards, how we could trap them or something and get them out of there.
And you've lost your own calves.
Yeah, they kill those calves as they're being born. And then, of course, I go down there and bury them as soon as I see the buzzards. I know what happened. But unless you're right there to help the cow, you can't, and you don't know, you can't sit right there on top of the cow and wait for her to have a calf. And unless you, now one, I knew by morning she'd have a calf, and she didn't have it until about 10 o'clock. And I kept watching and waiting. And when, by the time I saw the first buzzard, I went down there, and already that buzzard attacked that calf before I even got there. And there was two or three more circling around that landed in the trees come down to help me. But it's terrible. We just can't sit right there with the cow. We've got five or six more going to have calves.
I guess I'd heard you say that, but I didn't realize it's getting your calves.
Yes, they're getting the calves as they're being born. And that's how these registered cows that we got from San Jose.
Yes, beautiful thing.
So,
did they harm the cows?
No, they don't seem to harm the cows. It's just the calves that are there.
Shelley, don't you remember you that time? He come up there and was sitting at the breakfast table with you, eating lunch. I think you gave him a lunch. And you told him that cow had been over in your rye for a week.
Billy Hughes?
Yes.
Uh-huh.
And he's just going to have to do something about it.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, he got her out. I don't know how he got her out. I saw him going with that horse, lickety-split one way, the cow going the other, and I don't know how he ever got her out of there. She jumped the fence.
Yeah.
Whatever he told that cow, I don't know what was between the two of them, but that cow never did come back in that field. She never did jump that fence, and she'd been jumping it for months and months and months. And I put her out. But she'd come back in. But he put her out that one time, and she didn't come back in. But after I got in touch with him and told him about the dead cow that was there, or the cow that was dying, and he came back out the next morning and fed it. And he disappeared that morning. It wasn't 2 hours later, and that cow was in our field, and she's in there now. And I can't get a hold of Billy Hughes. But she had not come into that field until he showed up on that place there.
Finally came back.
She's back in there now. I ran her out yesterday. She's back in again last night when I went into, the day before I ran her out. She was in there last night when I went down to feed the cows hay.
Is she in there now?
She's in there now.
Yeah, that's a big Brenna.
That's that same one. I see that cow in my sleep. I know her so well. I was in hopes that the one that was down was her, because she looked a lot like her. When I got to looking at the cow more closely, I could see it wasn't the same one.
Yeah.
But I was hoping it was her. I wouldn't even call Billy Hughes. I would let her sit there and rot. That cow's made me so mad. I tell you.
Hey, Shirley's got so much work to do over there. Go get your mama. Let me tell you before she does it. Tell Faye about, what do you call him, Papa Doc?
Daddy.
Faye, I never saw anything like it. Right up there, where he could hardly wiggle, he was just as sporty. And he was sitting up there in front of the fire, and he just felt miserable, and he could hardly stay in the chair. And I went up there to talk to him, and he cocked his head at me and all, and was sassy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
He was a bird, wasn't he?
Yeah, he sure was. He was determined to do things for himself. I look back on it now, and everything happened exactly the way that man wanted it to go.
Yeah.
Everything he asked went just exactly the way he wanted to go. He wanted to see Ruby. And it all worked out that she got to come down and stay those few days with him.
Yeah.
and she went back on Wednesday. And then he wanted to see, but he wanted to get his business all taken care of. And we had those deeds made up for him, and he signed them. So that took care of the property, the estate, and everything. And then we didn't have to have a lawyer to probate the will, which would have ran into some money. And he realized this, so he wanted to get that out of the way. And he wanted Ruby to either have the property or for us to pay Ruby for her part of the property. So we got that taken care of. She didn't want the property, so we took the property over, and then we pay her when we can, or as soon as we can, for her part of it. And she's going to give us, I think, 2.5 years, 3 years, something like that, to pay for it. So everything as far as his estate was taken care of. And he, of course, he'd sold his house earlier and sent Ruby the money. He sold it to his brother for $2,000. Gave it to him. Uncle Cobra took it away from him, more like it. But anyhow, she got the $2,000 and made a down payment on, with some other money that she had on the place there in Ohio. So that's where she plans to stay, is in Ohio. And
yeah, Ruby pretty good at business. Especially.
Well, I tell you,
they moved
for the education that she has, it looks like she would be. But I don't know how they figure or what their motives are or what, but they just don't seem to
surely
make
when
a
people
go of
are on the move all the time, and they don't live at home, you see, they live up there among strangers, and everything they make, it costs them, doesn't it?
I don't know how they manage, because they're not in a place more than a year. Well, they were over in Australia because they had to stay there. They had some kind of a contract or something with those people, and yet they had to stay over there for 5-10 years, something like that. But they stayed 3. That was the longest they'd ever been in one place.
Yeah, and they're right gifted people, Faye.
I know. I understand.
With 4 children, I don't see how they can move around as much as they do, and the kids have learned anything
mm-hmm.
from their school.
Yeah.
That hurts a child when you take them out of their school. But according to Ruby, I don't know how Australia is, but she says the education over there is terrible.
Yeah.
And so here, they're trying to make up for lost time, and she's going from one place to another, and I don't see how they can learn anything with the they sure must know a lot about history and geography, and well, that's about all. I think our kids are very well educated, more so than mine, because I think they have gone, even though they have traveled around, to better schools than these kids have been exposed to. But I don't know how they can manage to hold on to anything.
Well, they're educated in a different way, to be honest.
Well. Yes, I see Ruby's a physical therapist.
Yeah.
And he teaches Spanish.
Spanish now.
Spanish.
What did you start out teaching?
English, and now he's teaching Spanish. Oh, he's in the journalism. He went into journalism for a while.
Yeah,
he's been
right.
into everything. She's put him through school nearly all the time that they've been married. And he's been, every time I turn around, he's in taking something else, you know. So I've lost track with him a long time ago.
Can't keep up with that.
Up
all
with
his schooling.
And then moving around so much, and he had to go this state or that state. But how can he retire from any state when he keeps traveling like that? He can't do it.
No, you can just transfer so much from one state to another, can't you?
That's what I thought. But every time they move for a better job. He says,
yeah.
But how in the world can you get a better job every time you move? Well, just from the time they've been in New Hampshire, they were out in Indiana. They went from Indiana to New Hampshire. From New Hampshire, they went to Ohio.
Yeah.
And they've been here back less than 3 years.
You have to like moving.
I don't know. I told her what I would do if I were her is buy a trailer.
Well, you know,
I think I would, because they have to sell all their furniture every time they move or have it moved, and that's expensive.
Oh, that is really costly. It's
so,
like buying it all over again.
What in the world?
You know, when I think about Mr. Dodd, though, that Halloween night, talk about a good sport.
Yeah.
He
enjoyed
that.
He was the best.
He enjoyed that. He enjoyed it very much. But like I said, now he got the business with Ruby. He saw Ruby, got to visit with her for those few days, and then he got all his business taken care of, and he wanted to see his brothers and sisters, so we took him down Saturday, and I knew it was going to kill him. I knew that trip was going to finish him, but it was something he had to do. He said himself that he didn't think he could make it. So we left, and he got to visit with all of his sisters and brothers except one, and he'd seen her shortly before. And he ate dinner at Aunt Colbert's. And on the way back, we bought him an ice cream cone, and he didn't finish it. And I knew then he was sick, because he never would leave a half of an ice cream cone. So I told Aunt Colbert, I said, when we left, I said, we'll be lucky if we make it home with him. I said, he looks so bad, and he's so tired. And Aunt Colbert says, yes. He said, we'll be up to see him. He said, I expect he'll last another 6 months at least. And I said, Aunt Colbert, he looks so bad. I said, don't trust it. I said, I don't think that he'll live to get back home. Well, he did. But that was another one of his wishes, that he would die on that place. And when he died, he wanted to go very quickly, and he did that.
Uh-huh.
So when I look back, everything he wanted to do, he had done. I mean, he had it to, just as if he had everything marked out the way he wanted to go. He had it down, right down to the last. And he didn't want to be among any of us when he did die. But he wanted to be on the place. And he wasn't. He was over there in that cottage.
Uh-huh.
But Berman said to me the night of the burial, and that was one of my reasons for going to New York. He said, honey, he said, if you had had Daddy come in here that night, he'd still be with us.
Oh.
And I was already blaming myself for not being right with him when he died.
Yeah.
And when he said that, it just hurt. That hurt something terrible, because I'd taken as best care as I knew how of him.
Oh,
and
yeah.
Then when he said that, and I thought that's what he was, you know, thinking anyway. But I had him take him over to the cottage that night, Saturday night, because the next day being Sunday, he needed rest, and he needed quiet, you know, to be away from the kids. And the next day being Sunday, the kids would have been there making noise and waking him up and everything. So I figured he'd be better off in his bed. And he liked it in that cottage over there to himself. So that was the main reason I had him take him over there. And he took that attitude about it. So, but when the day of the burial,
you know, people say things like that without thinking about what effect it.
Well, I realized he was under a lot of strain.
Yeah.
And that day of the burial, we went down and had the burial at Winter Park, then drove all the way to Tampa, and let Ruby stay with her mother. And then we hadn't seen his mother in 7-8 years, so we went in to visit with her, which was against both our religions. But we went in there and sat down and tried to get, you know, carry on a decent conversation with them. And right away they got in an argument. So that was some more turmoil and confusion.
Oh, Berman's mother.
Mm. So we left Ruby there. And we weren't even there an hour.
Yeah.
Isn't that awful?
Yeah.
And she hadn't even seen two of the smallest children.
Yeah.
So we weren't there an hour before there was an argument. So we left and drove all the way back, all this in the same day. And then Berman said that night. So you see there was a lot of strain there.
Oh,
He may never have said it if he hadn't been under all that pressure. But when he did say, and then during the funeral, for some reason or another, and I hadn't had Bobby on my mind for a couple months, and I saw that girl standing beside the coffin just as plain as I'm sitting here looking at you and Mr. Miles. Well, now that's the truth. And I hadn't even thought about that girl. So that night when he said that, I reached over and picked up the phone and I called her. Now, I normally would have called...
Your sister.
Mm-hmm. I normally would have called my brother which is the baby, and we're very close, you know, the two of us. Or Mickey, the one that's younger than Bobby. You see, Bobby's a year younger than I am. So I would have called either Mickey or Donnie, but I certainly wouldn't have called Bobby. And for some reason, I picked up that phone and I called Bobby. And I said, Bobby, how would you like some company? And she said, what? I said, how would you like? It's been 10 years since the phone. So she said, yes, come on up. I said, well, it'll be a day or two before I can get away. She said, well, since you're coming, I've got to tell you this. She said, I've had a test ran, and she said, I have cancer of the breast. And
so
I said, well, I'll be right up there. You know, so that was on Wednesday, but I didn't leave until Sunday. And after I got up there, they couldn't get a bed. They were so full.
Yeah, that week, Faye.
I was up there a week before she finally went to the hospital.
Of all things.
And they operated on the, well, during that week they took another test and it was still positive cancer. So they operated on her that Monday. It was a week, it was 8 days, the day when they operated on her. And the first breast, they found no cancer. They were just large cysts.
Mm-hmm.
And so we all figured then that the cancer was in the other breast.
Mm-hmm.
Well, Berman called me every day I was up there, and I figured I'd better come home or go to jail for not paying the phone bill. So I came home on the second, well, I was there for 2 weeks. I came home on the second weekend. And she was operated on the next day after I arrived home. And they found no cancer in the second breast.
Well,
so she had no cancer at all.
Oh, that was
that
a relief, wasn't it?
I'm telling you, I was so happy about that. I think a lot of people were praying for her, and I think that's the only thing that saved her. If she had cancer there, the Lord cured it before they touched her with a knife, because they sure... That doctor said he was just amazed because those reports were definitely positive. So.
Well, but you got a good visit, and you needed that after all the other.
And now she's just doing it. She called me last night and talked to me about an hour and a half. She's going to have a phone bill.
Oh, did she?
Yeah, she called me. She
well, now that's what you said.
Kid.
You all had talked all night one night when she was here, practically.
Yeah.
And I was over there that evening, you know. And I try not to stay too long when I'm over with people where they have a family. No, I don't want to get away.
That's Ruby. That's Berman's sister. I'm talking about Bobby, my sister.
I just slipped the
dog,
yeah. Yeah. She, you got him kind
yes.
of
no,
confused.
No, I know. I just
slipped.
But, she...
Well, now, Bobby talks, too.
Oh, she has developed the best sense of humor of anybody I have ever met.
Really?
And I didn't realize it until I got up there and visited with her this time. She is a card. She's as comical as they come. And she never was like this. She's always quiet, mousy type. You know, she's very, very quiet. Very timid. And the only thing she ever knew how to do was to comb her hair. I never could get any help out of that girl from the time she was little, you know. All she knew how to do was stand in front of that mirror and comb her hair. Ooh, that used to. I used to like to comb mine, but I never had time.
You mean she's up there at all that population center and just sits back and got a sense of humor?
She's developed it from somewhere.
Yeah.
She always used to be very thin. She's about your size, very, very thin and very active. And she was 10 years ago when I went up there. She had two children. She's had a baby since. I went up there this time, and I thought, well, all I had to do, you know, look for her, to recognize her, was her long blonde hair, well combed, well groomed, you know, and very, very thin, you know. And I knew her anywhere. And Mickey, my other sister, I know her because she's a little bit heftier than Bobby was. I knew both of them. And I was sitting in that terminal trying to make phone calls, trying to find out where these people were to come and get me at the airport, because I was supposed to have been in at 8:05 the night before, and I didn't get there until 8:45 the next morning because of the storm. So I was trying to find someone to come to pick me up. And I called Donnie, there was no answer. I called Bobby's, there was no answer. I called Mickey's, and there was no answer. So I was trying to get a taxi to get me out of the terminal, about 25 miles to where one of them went. So I was just about ready to dial for the taxi, and around the corner came these two huge women. And Bobby says, of course they had big heavy coats on, you know. And this one gal, which is Bobby, had this jockey hat pulled down over her eye, looked like some kind of a crook, you know, from out of the 30s. Had this jockey hat pulled down like this. And had her hair cropped off to her ears, and her hips were that big. You know, she came waddling around that corner, and she says, "And there she is."
Why, sure.
I looked up and looked at her, you know.
In the terminal.
Right there in the terminal. Right. Everybody turned around and looked at us, you know. And Mickey right behind her, and I didn't recognize her either. She had lost so much weight. She was so gaunt in her face that it didn't even look like her. And Bobby had gained all this weight down here, you see, but she was still very thin in the face. And I recognized her then when she said, "And there she is," you know, turned around and looked at her. And I had to stare at her for a while before. Then, of course, I didn't want them to realize that that they had changed that much. So but they recognized me right off the bat inside the phone booth yet with all this kerchief and everything else around my head. They knew who I was, so they recognized me. But Lord have mercy, I would have gone home with anybody before I'd have gone home with them, because I didn't really recognize.
Well, what
Lord,
what does she talk like?
A Yankee.
Yeah.
She just really talks up a storm, and just as comical. Everything she says comes out funny for some reason. And she never was like that. She's very serious and very quiet, and you'd say something to her colored a little bit in the opposite direction, and she'd sit there and blush, and she wouldn't say a word. But anymore, she is just as calm. I think it's her husband that's changed her attitude a lot. He's quite a person to talk with.
Oh, really?
But she sure has changed. And Mickey was more of a quiet one, and she used to be a devil in disguise. She sure was a terror when she was little, but she's changed. She's very quiet and nervous type. But Bobby, he's just wonderful.
Well, Charlotte, you didn't want to stay up in that area?
Oh, heavens no. I couldn't wait. You know, I laughed right out loud. Everybody sitting on the plane, you know, in dead silence. There wasn't a word anywhere. You know, no conversation at all going. And I looked out the plane there just as we were getting going across from the Georgia into the Florida area, and I kept looking down below trying to recognize anything, you know, that looked like home. Any green patch of greenery, you know, that would have made me feel real good after seeing all that snow. And the first palm tree I saw in Palm Meadows, I just let out the biggest giggle you ever heard. Everybody turned around and looked at me. Oh, I'm so glad to see those palmettos. I didn't know what to do.
Makes you. It's good for you to just get away a little while.
Oh,
and see what
Lordy.
Got
I tell you,
on.
I was gone for 2 weeks, but it seemed like I was gone for 20 years. I couldn't wait to get back. Oh, I hate it up there.
Just get back to all these problems. That's nice, isn't it?
Yeah, now we're back in the same old groove.
Yeah.
Doesn't
what
take
was
long.
That Berman was saying about, I have a faint recollection he talked about before, but it never did register until yesterday. Those sand spurs out there. You got two kinds of sand
mm-hmm.
spurs. One grows up high and you make hay if you fertilize it.
That's right. If you get it before it tossles out into sand spurs, it makes pretty good hay.
How high does it grow?
Oh, if you fertilize it, it gets up waist high. About like Pangola.
Sand
it's about like Pangola. Uh-huh. These tall kinds. You find them growing a lot in groves, up among the trees, you know, around the trees.
Yeah. I just never knew what they were, I guess.
And crabgrass grows a lot in, among the groves. And, there's something else. Crowfoot grass grows in the groves. But those sand spurs are very common for growing up among the trees, you know, underneath the trees. And that's mainly what chokes out all the fertilized going to the trees.
That's why
the growers don't like them very, very well.
It's that tall sand spur.
Yeah. What they do, they disc them down and let them rot and go back into the ground for mulching and fertilize the tree.
But the kind that I know about is the little low sand spur that grows right in the grass.
Those,
if you walk along there, it gets right on your ankle.
Those are the kind I hate. Boy.
They are something.
And we've got them in patches around that swimming pool. You know, if you disturb any ground, they seem to come up. Where you disturb that ground. Well, he pulled all that ground up there around that swimming pool, you know.
Yeah.
And boy, he started a good bit of them. I mean, we have to get out there and really dig them up.
Right out there where Ms. Boyle had her garden. It was a good one when I came here. I put that silage trench in there. And then when we filled it up and took all the top of it off, you see, nothing, right down to the hard, pebbly clay. I put that I couldn't get grass growing, I put indigo out there, and the indigo grew, and it was pretty thick. Well, sir, you know, that's been three or four years. You know, I was out there the other day when we was digging up another little strip there to put in a few rows of vegetables. The whole thing is covered with bahia grass.
Mm-hmm.
Bahia grass is the most extraordinary thing.
It's very tough. That's what I'd like to do, is get out there and fertilize a good field of bahia for early pasture, you know, right now. I'd love to get some fertilizer out.
Yeah.
I guess we can afford the taxes are coming up. We got that to pay first. Ugh. It's always something.
On that new house.
But I'd love to, I imagine they will be on this year's. I think it is. On this year's taxes. I'm not sure how you looked. But,
when our government said he didn't want to fertilize late, he'd fertilize that old,
No, he wants to fertilize early so that he can get everything off before the sand spurs come to bloom, come to head.
And miss out the sand spurs.
Yeah, get the hay before the sand spurs.
Yeah.
But I'd work it differently, but.
How would you do it?
I'd be darned if I'd worry about the sand spurs. Right now, we got to have early pasture. We got to have some grass for those cows. And where he thinks it's going to come from, he's going to let them eat voluntarily. Voluntary grass that comes up back in there. Whatever comes up.
Grass won't volunteer unless it's got fertilizers, Shirley.
I know. It's got to have something. And he's going to let them go, I guess. I don't know what he's going to do. I'm disgusted. I kept telling him to put some fertilizer out in the last couple of weeks and let the rain take care of that back in there and let it grow so they have some early pasture.
Yeah.
When this hot weather comes, that rye is going to be gone. They won't have any rye. And it'll be 2-3 months, be at least a month or a month and a half before we could plant anything in there to come up to eat for the deeds.
At least that, wouldn't it?
Yeah, it'd be at least a month and a half, 2 months before they can get anything in there. Because
it's going to rain one or two weekends when you're going to do the
planting. That's right.
See that?
That's right. Oh, Lord.
They never fail.
Yeah. So,
well, I'll tell you, they have to have something to eat, even as few as we got. Keeps us humping me.
Well, I wish we hadn't bought those cows when we did. I sure wish we hadn't. I wish we'd waited until this spring again. This has been the hardest winter I think we've ever put cows through.
Since the middle of January. It has been one cool spell after another.
Well, we had one earlier than that, didn't we? Because we started freezing. We started feeding back before Daddy's birthday, and his birthday was the 12th of September. So we've been feeding about the 1st of September. I mean, before the grass even got pinched.
I remember very well. We had that killing frost, two in a row, way before Thanksgiving, about the middle of the month.
Yeah.
And then we had those two big freezes.
Yeah.
Right at Thanksgiving.
And that really threw everything.
Yeah.
That threw everything.
And even this spring.
Now it fared off, you see, for Thanksgiving. That's November, December, January, almost 2 months. Mm-hmm. And then it lit in again.
All right. And then we had that pretty green grass here for a while, and here come another frost, this last one we had. I'm about sick with it. I wish they'd...
And now you see, this it's froze, I think freezing, dried out the ground. Because the ground is dry, of course, the wind blowing.
That wind blows.
So it's not going to come back very fast, even with the weather, unless it gets a little moisture.
Well, I think we'll have rain before we have real
warm.
They
get mambo so she can visit a little bit with Sharon. She can't.
She have a little bite of lunch with
us? Well, I'm afraid
she
I better
got
not.
They do over there. I gotta
butcher up some of that cow anyway for the cow, for the dogs. You know, I'm not gonna try to save any meat except for the dogs, because
mambo hears. She hears talking about it. Shirley, I don't know. I never see Miss Dusty. I never catch her. She won't come over here.
Well, Marvin's been home for the last 2 weeks. See, he's on a vacation now, and he's trying to get some grass planted and land cleared, and they're doing quite a bit of farming over there right now.
Oh, are they?
So that's probably why you haven't seen him. When Marvin's there, you won't see her.
Yeah.
She stays right at home.
Well, now, I haven't even... been in touch with him for a month or two.
Yeah.
Well, let me tell you when it was. Christmas, I was laying off to go over there and sort of work along with him when they was putting in that grass seed where they had cleared off with a bulldozer. Because I wanted to see how they did it. Well, they both got laid up.
That's when I had that flu.
Flu.
Yeah. Yeah, he was pretty sick with that.
Was he?
She went to the doctor a few times with it, and I don't think she could get him in. And yeah, I think he finally did go in and get some pills.
Yeah.
But he was pretty sick.
Yeah.
And he's still not feeling too good.
And then that hangs on so long if you have a good case of it.
Yeah. Well, he says he's sore yet in his ribs. He was over there trying to help me move that heifer.
Yes.
And he said he was sore then.
Yes.
Ribs. So.
Yes, and I just soon, you know, to me, she's one of the most comical people I've ever seen. Everything she says is funny. I mean, I just love.
Well, she's so sympathetic or something. I don't know.
She's
complaining a lot, you know. Things never go right for her.
Yeah.
Of course, they never go right for us either, but I do a lot of complaining. But I don't think I'm quite the complainer that she seems to be.
Oh, she's a
cunt.
Well, good morning.
Good morning. How are you?
Just fine.
Good.
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 Wobbly knee.
What's the matter?
Well,
did you fall?
No, it's just old rheumatism.
Oh, arthritis.
Oh,
you don't ever have arthritis.
Did you give her this chair?
No,
or
she's
sitting right here. She just came in. I'm just combing my hair. And
well, I came over dressed just like I was. We've had a bit of farm trouble over there this morning with some calves.
Right.
I didn't even take time to change, because I knew if I did,
Now, this is the end of Channel 1 Right, and a part of the visit with Shirley this Friday morning, 12th of March, 1971. After they'd butchered the calf to see what made it die, the heifer. This is the end of Channel 1 Right, and the visit of Shirley this Friday morning, 12th of March, 1971. And Mamu has come in to visit now. Channel 1 Right, the end of Channel 1 Right, and the part of the visit with Shirley this Friday morning, 12th of March, 1971.